Episode 307.
If we're business owners and we're screwing up, I have the utmost respect for anybody who starts a business, because that is right there when you decide you're starting a business. Just like you said, people are going to ask you, it seems really hard. Why don't you quit?
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Welcome, automotive aftermarket professionals, to episode 307 of Remarkable Results Radio. Hey, in this episode, enjoy some entrepreneurial talk with Chris Clodier, and I promise, an insightful discussion of the entrepreneurial struggle. Carm Capriotto here, helping aftermarket professionals achieve their own remarkable results, and reminding you that this episode is presented by Federal Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus. For serious technical training and support, online, on-site, and on demand, Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Find out more at fmgarageguru.com. We continue to grow our social connections. So glad to welcome new Facebook friends, Scott Osborne, Robert Pitari, Cass Choate, Luke Walker, and Andrew Green, and newest LinkedIn connections, Tom Seiger and Dean Hendrixy. It's easy to get connected with the podcast. Just go to remarkableresults.biz/social, and you'll find every link to get involved, including the free Aftermarket Insider Newsletter. I know you know this, but don't forget that every podcast episode has their own show notes page. This episode with Chris Clodier is at remarkableresults.biz/E307. There you'll find additional bio information, links to previous episodes Chris has been on, the episode's talking points, and a link to a special article we talked about. Also, a list of the books we discussed. Just a quick tip for all podcast app users. If your version of the Remarkable Results Radio app is older than July 2017, go to your app store and update. A new user experience awaits you, and in your hands, you get a powerful app that brings every interview, including the Academy podcasts, to your fingertips. Search for Remarkable Results Radio on your App Store. Now, welcome back Chris Clodier to the podcast. Chris and I had a great conversation, passionate at times, on entrepreneurialism. Chris is a serial entrepreneur and has some wise words and experience at it. We talk bootstrapping, cash is king, the struggle, trust your gut, leadership, and even salesmanship. Now, don't shy away from these topics. The discussion just may set you off onto a better or different course. Chris has the scars, like all of us, that are the lessons we all learn as we march toward an improving and brighter future. This interview is going to cement much of what you know about growing a business, and some of our talk will hit you, I hope, smack in your entrepreneurial soul and get you to understand the journey you're on just a little bit better. As I mentioned, find the cliff notes for this episode at remarkableresults.biz/E307. Here comes some business-to-business life lessons you can use to grow and prosper. Now, listen to learn just one thing. Here's Chris Clodier. Hey, a warm welcome to Chris Clodier, serial entrepreneur. Yes, business manager, owner of Golden Rule Auto Care, the architect and the president of AutoFlow.me, former software engineer at Southwest Airlines, former president of Lone Star Auto Repair. You studied all this stuff at the University of North Texas, so I think you're qualified to be a serial entrepreneur.
Been one my whole life. Just didn't realize it till recently.
Yeah, and you also own some other businesses. You were in partnership with it, or maybe have stretched your dollars some other places?
I have. I own real estate. I own part of a bar in San Francisco. I own actually part of another auto repair shop in California. Yes. I like to own things.
Okay, great. Well, that's why you're here. We want to talk about, Chris, the whole entrepreneurial thing. You know, what's the drive? And, you know, so many guys start shops today, and it doesn't matter. You can own a shop. You can own a baked goods store. You know, go back to the whole E-Myth concept. And if people don't know what E-Myth is, please get the Michael Gerber book and read it, because I think that helps define how to become a good entrepreneur, how to run a business without you having to be there, how to scale it. But so many people start out with no money, and they wonder a year or two in, am I ever going to lose this? They're struggling, Chris.
Yes, the struggle. So first, thanks, Carm, for having me on. I know I've been on before. We've talked about shop technology. We've talked about digital sales process. And now we get to talk a little bit about my struggle.
Yeah, I want to learn about Chris Clodier. I want to learn about, you know, what makes you tick.
And that struggle is that. So it's funny. I was just listening to your 300th episode, and I was listening to your endless desire for improvement. Not only, you know, hey, what's the next thing? Right. And then not only that, your continuous improvement for learning and your love for and passion. So I'm like that. Gary Vaynerchuk, you familiar with Gary Vaynerchuk?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. 400 trillion to one, right? That's your odds of life. So if you think about that, you think, man, I get one shot at this thing called life. How can I make the most of it? Now, unfortunately, when you wear 14 titles like me and you're a serial entrepreneur, it comes with the struggle, because then you're always thinking, oh, can I do a little bit more? Can I do one more thing? Can I maybe take that 1 30-minute, that time where I'm in between walking from my car to my house, and can I put one more thing in there, right? And I think it just compresses down. I mean, and first thing is I know I'm all over the place right now, but that struggle of being that person, right? You know, coming from an entrepreneur or a corporate America like you've gone to a business owner, right? Like you said, whether you're a auto repair shop owner, whether or not you're a software owner, you've had lots of different guests on here, whether you're a trainer, whether you're a part salesman, and you're owning your own distribution center, right? But what does it feel like to constantly be in that struggle with yourself, right? Questioning. When you work for corporate America, you have somebody telling you on a day-to-day basis who you are, whether that's good or bad. They're reaffirming that you're a good person or that you're a bad person, but you're getting some sort of reaffirmation.
But your point is that when you're an entrepreneur and you're up there on top, you're kind of alone.
You're alone. Absolutely. You're alone, right? Who's telling you? Now, you have a lot of people telling you that you're doing wrong, right? Because they're not doing what you do. And it's either out of envy or jealousy that they're trying to pull you down. So let's take the guy who starts an auto repair shop. I love these Facebook groups, and I'm a part of lots of them because I'm a software owner and I'm an auto repair shop owner. And I read this one post of this guy who said, hey, I'm in my garage, I'm fixing cars, and I'm wanting to get out and maybe go find a shop, maybe hire somebody. And I saw this guy get attacked by some of the shop owners saying that, wow, you're the reason why we look bad. You're the reason why we get, you know, trashed, is because you're working out of your house. And here we are working out of, you know, our garages. That right there defines the struggle, right? This guy's just trying to go to the next level. He's trying to get out of his, you know, everybody starts in a garage somewhere.
Bingo.
Right?
That's the answer. And yeah,
there you go. But some people forget that, right? They forget that they had to go through that struggle, right? That they had that initial, hey, I'm going to do this. And you have, so, and luckily there was enough people on that group too that were saying, hey, go get a coach now. Go get a good shop management system. Go get this. But you still had other people that were immediately attacking this guy. And I'm like, wow. I mean, how in this world, when we're supposed to be supporting each other and elevating each other, are we attacking the young guy who might be the next guy who revolutionizes the way we do auto repair, and we're keeping him out because he doesn't have enough money, like you talk about, to start his own shop?
I'm talking with Mike Zralik, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. So you have this van, and it's the Guru on the Go van, and it's all nicely decked out, and you drop by for lunches and learns. How do shops get a chance to get that van to come to their place?
Well, they can, of course, call into our Guru hotline and request it. They can talk to their parts distributor, you know, and through that channel, we can go out and do some training, or even with us out in the field. You know, if they see us, we do various warehouse distributor type shows, many different events. We're out there everywhere. Just come by and ask, and we'll be more than happy to come by.
Hey, Mike, if I said you were a champion for Federal Mogul Motor Parts, would I be right?
You betcha.
So give me an example.
I live, eat, breathe Federal Mogul on a daily basis. You know, growing up, I being in the racing industry, I knew a lot about Moog. I loved Moog. Felpro, same thing. To go out and be able to talk about a company this big, this strong, it makes me happy every single day. I'm so excited to do it on a day in and day out basis.
What are technicians saying after you're done with your presentation?
When can you come back? They want more day in and day out.
They want more, and you have more to give. You've got so many key product lines in the industry.
Oh, we have a ton of product lines and a ton of training that's available, you know, with those product lines and on a technical side too.
How dazzled are the techs to see that compression-loaded ball joint with the pre-installed integral dust boot?
They come unglued. They are so excited about that because less frustrations. You know, they've been dealing with issues in the field of damaging that boot during installation, and it makes it so much easier to put in. And it's a beautiful piece.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com.
We did a town hall academy on starting your business, and one of my opening lines was, we have to help. It doesn't matter if we want to call them the millennials who want to start or the 30 or 40 somethings that want to start. And my answer, in the reason that I said that, who's going to take over for the 60% of the boomers who own shops today? Are we going to just fall away? Wait a minute. These are wonderful opportunities to sell your business. But we have to help. We have to stop being negative. We have to go out and embrace, open our arms and say, oh, by the way, okay, do this. But you got to do it smarter than we did. Let me help you.
Agreed. We have to help, right? But we also have to realize that and remember, we went through the struggle, right? Some of us are still going through the struggle, right? And I gave you that link and you're going to post it on the podcast. But I mean, some of these lines I pulled from the struggle. The struggle is when people ask why you don't quit and you don't know the answer. You just have that passion to want to go. My favorite one is when you go on vacation to feel good and you feel worse. Because you're thinking about the struggle, right? You try and get away, but if it's truly in your core of what you're going to build and what you're going to do, you don't get away.
Chris sent me this incredible article by Ben Horowitz called The Struggle. It is a very, very powerful but very short read. And if you have ever thought about owning your business or you have owned your business or you are successful today, you can relate to this in so many ways. And if you're just starting, there's some great visionary ideas in here to prepare you for sometimes how lonely it can be at the top. And it almost says, hey, like you said, when you go on vacation to feel better, you actually feel worse.
I've been there. That's me. That's my software company right now. It is in my auto repair shop is doing well. I've built my structure there. My software company it's in a struggle, right? And it's a good struggle, but it's still a struggle, right? And I could even say that my auto repair shop, it's still a struggle because it's never, when I say that and people say, oh, you're an absentee owner. No, I'm not. I'm still managing and directing that ship. I'm still doing weekly meetings with my managers. I'm still doing monthly meetings with my employees. I'm still checking the numbers on a constant basis, right? I'm still measuring the metrics. I'm still going in and fixing things when they need to be broken. I'm just not there all the time, right? I'm on to a new struggle, a bigger mountain. That's what we do, Carm.
I know. One of the other great lines from here, the struggle is when food loses its taste.
Turns gray in your mouth.
I know. And that means that you're so overwhelmed that you're just eating because someone told you have to eat to stay alive, but you're not enjoying a damn bit of it. And it almost relates to the fact that if food doesn't taste good, you're not having any fun in your business.
Right. And you starting your podcast, once again, 300th episode, I know you went through that struggle, right? You had no idea what you're going to do. You're just going to do it. And I'm sure you had naysayers and you had other people who elevated you, but it didn't matter because it was in your heart that you knew you had to go through the struggle.
another great line, Chris. I mean, I don't mind covering a couple of these because I think it makes for great listening. The struggle is when people ask you, why don't you quit? And you don't know the answer.
You don't know the answer.
Because you're half in and you're half out, right?
You're questioning yourself. Is this the right thing I'm doing? I'll go back to the Gary Vee thing, right? You get a 400 trillion chance of being to be alive. And it's amazing what we complain about. It's amazing what we designate as important. It doesn't take anything away because your life is different than my life, right? But when we think about the odds of what we get to live, we're pretty blessed to be able to at least go and screw up something. If we're business owners and we're screwing up, I have the utmost respect for anybody who starts a business, because that is right there when you decide you're starting a business. Just like you said, people are going to ask you, it seems really hard. Why don't you quit?
You lose a great employee. You lose a loyal customer. You start thinking, what did I go wrong? What didn't I do right? Someone said to do this and I decided to do that. You're always questioning yourself. And in the whole fact of the matter in our industry, we're bootstrapping this thing. We're using our own money.
Yes.
And, you know, there's no big venture capitalists that are going to help, you know, $1 million shop owner, well, a startup guy, maybe $300,000 to start. You're borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, and that's what makes it so difficult. I just did a great interview with Kevin and Lisa Eckler in Poughkeepsie, New York, and he was a tech for 20 years, and then he saw the light. He realized he went to a class, hired a business coach, and turned his business around, and it's only been the last 3 years, and he shares a great story. I was the greatest tech in the world and the worst business person in the world. He gave away too much. He never collected some of his money. I'll pay you Friday. He tells all these great stories, stories that you have heard over and over again. The listener of this podcast has heard over and over again. And some person asked me the other day, so why? With all the great wisdom that's going on, with all the things you're helping people learn, you know, people are paying it forward with their stories and their thoughts. Why do some people still continue to do the same thing every day, Chris?
I agree. Part of that struggle is understanding where you are in that struggle. I'm going to switch topics, right? As a business owner, as an entrepreneur, I think that we don't realize our job isn't to make a job or to buy a job or to be the job. As an entrepreneur first has an idea. That's what entrepreneurs, they have a crazy idea. They're wild, they're crazy, and they're the BHAGs of the world, right? They don't care. They're going to change the world. And then once you get to a level when you start become an entrepreneur, now you've got to get into management leadership, right? You've got to get into different levels, right? No longer, once that idea starts to materialize, now let's start getting into molding that and actually executing on that and making sure. And I agree. I see it all the time that people will buy these shops and maybe they'll hire a person or two, and hopefully they start hiring a person or two, but they never get to the point where they realize, you know, the work on your business versus in your business, that you're the entrepreneur. You're the one at the top. You don't need to be the one that everybody comes to when the fire is getting deep. You need to be the one that you replace. I always say this. I want to replace myself. I don't want that job. I don't want to be on the counter. I want to replace myself. I don't want to be managing my shop on a day-to-day basis. I want to replace myself. I don't want to be the guy selling my software. I want to replace myself. I don't want to be the guy developing the software. I want to replace myself, right? And only by replacing ourselves and letting go of that level of control can we start elevating our think outside of that struggle. So many times we get too deep into. And I go back to corporate. You went from corporate and I was from corporate. The hardest thing I ever did was leave corporate and go work for myself. And I have multiple emails. Every day I was sending myself an email about how I was going to quitting and go back to work, because I didn't have a boss telling me, hey, Chris, good job today. Or, hey, Chris, you know, going back to that. I needed validation. I had nothing. And it just was this, I'm like, this has got to be kidding me. So that whole lonely at the top thing is absolutely rings true. But people want to feel validated. They want, when they walk into their shop, they want everything on fire. And then they want to pull out the hose and be the fireman and put out all the fires. And they feel good about their day because they did something. Versus when you start working on your business, you don't have that same feeling. Nobody knows your name anymore at your shop because you're not the guy at the counter, nor are you the guy in the back. You're the guy that shows up every once in a while. Nobody needs you. And what happens when nobody needs you anymore, when they're all doing their job, right? When they're all living up to the expectations you want.
I love what you just said. And what was going through my mind is that because we need to learn leadership, because we need to learn business, because we need to learn to become the CEO of the business, we fail to realize that, you know, goals, both short, medium, and long-range goals, will help drive the decisions that you make today to replace yourself. And when you're just in the grind, grind, you never have a chance to know that that's part of what your job is. And why I think it is so important today at the service professional level to hire a coach, because that coach will help pull you way up and out. It's like, I want you to look at your business from this 180-foot view, not from the 8-inch view that you have every day. And
yes.
And I'm such a proponent. You know, I said this in the 300th. What I learned from the first 100 episodes, Chris, was that the most successful guys out there topped themselves up top the noggin with a rubber mallet and said, I got to get a business coach. And that, to me, was the biggest takeaway that I had in doing all the interviews that I've done, is the guys realized, listen, I was the greatest tech in the world, but I have to have a business coach. Part of that entrepreneurial lonesomeness, you know, holds them back.
I have a great story. I worked for syndicated radio, right? We talked about this. Syndicated in the South, 80 different markets. And I worked for this guy named Kid Craddock. He's passed away a little while ago. And he was a morning show DJ, very popular here in Dallas, very popular in the South. And this guy was, Dallas is one of the top five markets, and he was number one in a top five market. That's hard, right? It's incredible. And this guy was one of my best mentors ever in life, because exactly what you said. This guy had advisors and coaches. And I went to him one day and I said, Kid, you're number one in one of the top five markets. You're syndicated in 80 different cities. Why do you have advisors and coaches? And he goes, Chris, I'm number one in a top five city because I have advisors and coaches. Like you were talking about in your 300th, you never stop learning, right? Your 21 irrefutable laws of leadership. I know you know the book. The law number one is the law of the lid. You're the lid. As soon as you stop growing, your organization stops growing. Everything stops growing. It's my favorite law in the whole world. Mm-hmm. And here's a guy that, once again, like you said, he's at the top of his game and he still has advisors and coaches. And these were not cheap advisors and coaches. These were expensive advisors and coaches. So I agree with you. Absolutely. I have advisors for both companies. I have coaches for both companies. I have people that I'm constantly bouncing ideas off of to keep me in check. Now, sometimes I think they're stupid and they're high, but that's my entrepreneurism. I still get to make my road, right? And we can talk about ownership later and why you want to make sure that you have a majority of ownership in your destiny, because you don't want somebody telling you what to do. They can certainly suggest to you it might be a good idea. But yeah, absolutely. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah, and I do too. I have a coach and a mentor, and you know, all the great ideas, because as I said in the 300th, I just, you know, ideation is one of my top five strengths, and I bubble with them. But you know, okay, it's great. I have a bunch of them. Oh, look at the bucket. The bucket's full of great ideas. But you know, every once in a while, you need someone to come up and say, "All right, did you really think that one through?" I love that, Carm, but that's just right. Not. You know, it's a cool idea, but it may not fall into the brand. It may not fall into the structure. And I say, yeah, but never fall in love with all your ideas. Hey, superpowers. As an entrepreneur, what is an important superpower?
So my kids tell me my superpower is the ability to take a nap whenever I want. And I think that every good man should have that superpower. I think most of us do, right? Because we got to sleep when we got to sleep. And I have no problem with that. No, this is a good question. So I was sitting in front of a SMU panel of young engineers, and this happened a couple months ago, and I was asked this question, right? So I'm prepared, and I said, your gut. And they said, What? I said, your gut, right? Follow your gut, because the numbers might not make sense. And my best story about this is when I was buying the auto repair shop, I was looking to go get my MBA. I found an auto repair shop on Craigslist. My brother, who's an L1 master technician, just happened to live right around the corner. And I called him up and said, hey, do you want to go buy an auto repair shop? And he goes, eh, I'm good where I'm at. I said, well, come on, let's go look at it, right? We looked at it. Price was right. Business is dying. I get an advisor who's multimillionaire who advises me on this. And he says, Chris, give me the numbers. Let's run through the numbers. We run through the numbers, blah, 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 blah. And I said, man, this looks horrible. And he goes, good. You see that it looks horrible. I said, absolutely. By the numbers, it looks horrible. He goes, okay, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I don't know. And he said, well, let me ask you one thing. What does your gut tell you to do? And I said, really? After all this number crunching, you're going to ask me, what is my gut saying? And I said, my gut says, hell yeah. He said, then that's what you're going to do. And I said, you got to be kidding me. And he goes, no, because numbers, although they don't lie, they can misguide you, right? Because the numbers can tell you it's the worst proposition. The odds are against you. But think of all the people who have created great things because they thought, no, I'm going to change the world. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what the now, when we're business owners, I don't want to encourage the young business owner that says, oh man, I'm going to have a $10 million shop overnight. And he doesn't have a business coach and he doesn't understand what he's getting into. I understood what I was getting into, right? I knew the numbers were bad. We put a business plan in place. We put a marketing plan in place. The numbers just didn't add up at the time. So my gut, and I think that's it. I think that an entrepreneur, I think that people in general, right? It's your gut has to tell you where it's going to go. Your head's going to lie to you and tell you that's a big risk. I don't want to do it. But your gut's going to be the barometer to say, yeah, we should go that direction. Absolutely.
You know, it's amazing how similar you and I are.
I think we are.
Really, because I've always listened to my intuition and slash gut, however you want to say it, gut or intuition, and that always was my guide. And you know, Chris, when you have good gut instincts, good intuition, is when you don't do something.
You got it.
And later you find out you made a mistake, you didn't listen deep inside.
We had a third brother that was going to invest with us. And he looked at the numbers and he said, I'm out. Not going to make it. It does not make any sense. I said, well, we're going. He goes, I wish y'all the best of luck. Now he's going, man, why didn't y'all tell me?
I guess we tried to.
Right. Law of intuition. Another one. 21 irrefutable laws of leadership. Law of intuition. It's a great one, right? I think if anybody, that's another book. And I know you're an avid learner and avid, you know, and I've seen the book, the lists of books that have been passed around. You know, I tell you, if you're an entrepreneur and you're not reading a book a week, a book a month, if you're not reading a book a year, then you're not. So to me, books are wisdom. They're somebody else's journey. It's not going to be your journey. But God, you can learn so much without having to make the same mistakes that they made by just reading about their journey, right? So I'm a big avid reader. I believe it. Readers are leaders. Leaders are readers. I tell my daughters this every day. Read. That's how you lead, and that's how you live your life.
Good for you. You mentioned two really cool things a few minutes ago. You said the words business plan and marketing plan. I wonder how many startup service professional entrepreneurs have a business plan. Now, if they borrowed from SBA, for example, they had to have one. But if they started out with some of their savings, you know, they rented a place. You know, part of the problem is where are we going and how we get there?
Amen. I give that speech to my guys who work for me all the time. I give it to them with their finances. I give it to them with their lives. Where are you going to be? I give it to them with their certifications, right? I always ask, if you're going on vacation, do you have a destination and know how you're getting there? Yeah, I do. Okay, why do you then go blindly with the rest of your life? Now, another good piece of advice that I got about business plans and marketing plans. You make one. This is one of my best advisors, and he said, you make your business plan, make your marketing plan, make your forecast, and guess what? They're wrong.
Right. They change often.
They change. Yeah, they've already changed. By the time you get them done, get ready to update them. Right.
Ironically, in corporate America, we had a 5-year strategic plan, and it was renewable every 3. And in year two, we started to work on the three, even though the five was, you know, if you will, locked in stone. Why? As we all know, we are traveling at the speed, you know, technology at the speed of life. The world's changing, you know, next month is going to be different than it is. You can't be locked into something. It needs to be organic, flowing, ever-changing, but it's still in all. If you don't have that, if you don't have that vision that you can share with the rest of the world, I'd love to come to work for an upstart owner who says, hey, let me tell you where we're going and how we're getting there. Let me tell you what my plans are. Would you like to be part of this?
Yeah, I tell you, so, and it's funny, I'll take the auto repair shop versus the software. Auto repair, I'm not saying that that's not difficult, because it's difficult, but I'll tell you this, it's kind of like the VCR. There's product maturity already there. So you know a VCR, you got a play button, you got a rewind button, you got to have a pause button. And in order to be in the VCR game, you have to have these components on the VCR. If you listen to all 300 of your podcasts and you open up an auto repair shop and you apply 60% of what you learn just from listening to your podcasts, you will be successful. There's nothing revolutionary about auto repair. It's just not. It's been around for a long time. It's going to be around for a long time. So they say. We'll see. But all you got to do is make more right decisions than wrong decisions and listen to what other people are already doing. Now, software, when you're developing a product that doesn't have maturity, right? Because the whole digital landscape of what that whole back office or whatever, you know, we're calling the workflow, the add-on to the SMS for the digital inspections, all the things that go on with that, that playing field is still pretty wide open, and there's no maturity. There's no VCR made there yet. So you got one company where you just got to kind of listen to other people, and you got another company where, I'll tell you this, my business and marketing plan change daily on this. Constant fluctuation in software because the speed of life. I heard Bill say that earlier in your 300th episode, right? Technology changes the speed of life. I love it, and that's absolutely true. So you're in constant change mode. I mean, you talk about, once again, a struggle when things are constantly changing underneath you and your land's constantly shifting. Whereas auto repair, once again, if I follow CARMS, if I listen to 300 of episodes and I follow 60%, I am guaranteeing you success. Guaranteed. I mark my words, right? I will investigate your auto repair shop if you can tell me you're following 60% of CARMS podcasts.
I know it works because I get all kinds of emails.
Absolutely.
All kinds of direct messages on Facebook. I smile like a proud papa, and I'm going to be a grandpa here this year. And, you know,
congratulations.
All of my children, if you will, the listeners of the podcast who communicate with me, because I encourage them, carm@remarkableresults.biz, let me know. And actually, I've been starting to save them almost as a really cool little, you know, testimonial thing. One day, I'd just love to publish and let these guys, you know, I don't want to expose some of the people that have said, you know, some really nice and kind things. The common denominator is they're learning something.
Hey, we both talked about this book the other day, Tools of Titans, right?
Oh, yeah,
we did. So one of the things that I picked up, that one of the guys, I don't remember his name right now, but he said, my goal is to help 1 million people. If I can help 1 million people, I will get everything I want. And I think, oh my Lord, what a profound statement. Who am I going to help today? Right? Versus what am I going to do for myself today? What am I going to do? Who am I going to help? Right? Like you're doing right now with your podcast, who am I helping? Right? Am I fixing cars or am I servicing or am I serving my community by providing a valuable service that truly is good? Software, am I providing something that, you know, my passion is technology. I mean, that's where I came from. I've been a developer. I love technology and I hate it. Let me get that. You know, it's a love-hate relationship, right? That's my passion. So me to be able to develop a tool that can get in people's hands that they can use, that makes sense, that can change their business for the better, that's me helping, right? That's me helping change a industry for the better. We always say that we want the cream to rise, right? We want the one ship raises all ships, right? So it's just my philosophy that
I'll never forget the day that when I was out visiting shops for corporate America, almost the impetus to start the podcast was what one shop owner said, and I walked into his place and I said, "Hey, how you doing?" And I introduced myself, and I said, "So how's it going?" And I'll never forget this. And it was years later that I started the podcast, but he held up a full-page ad from a big box store. And he said, "This is my problem." And I looked around the place. I looked in his bays. I looked at the uniform. I looked at the brand. I looked at the customer-facing offering. You know, I wasn't in a position to grab him by the neck, sit him down in his office in his chair, point my finger at his face and say, "You're the problem." But I wanted him to be, where could this person get some information that would help him have his own personal discovery, Chris?
Yes.
That it was internal, not external.
You respectfully disagreed that that ad was not his problem.
Oh boy, did I ever. Deep inside, I knew. So let's talk. We were talking about bootstrapping, and you know, which is starting a business without any outside resources or help.
Yes.
But when you get money, Chris, you know, cash starts to become king in the business. What should you do with it?
Hire good people, right? Good people aren't cheap. And you know, we talk about this as owners all the time, that we struggle with this. Hiring good people. Look, if I'm going to multiply myself, right, or add to my team, I need to go find the best of the best. And we talk about all the time, you know, get the right people on the bus. But I'll tell you, everybody says that, but they want to get them for bargain basement prices. And that's just not the way it works, right? Good people cost good money. So if you get, and good people, if you get the right people and you pay them the right, and this frustrates me when I'll sit in a 20 group room and then somebody will say, yeah, I'm paying this person so-and-so this much money. And everybody attacks them. Oh, you're wrong. You shouldn't pay him that much money. You shouldn't pay him that much money. And then I'll go, well, what does he do for you? And the guy goes, well, he's the greatest, right? He runs my shop for me. He takes care of everything for me. Like, so everybody attacks this guy without any, because we automatically think, oh, you have to have this margin to this and you have to have this margin to this. And there's truth in some of that, but really if you have, depending on what you're willing to sacrifice and depending on what level you're willing to get to, you have to know that I can't do it with, no offense, I can't do it with bargain basement people. No company has ever been built on bargain basement people, right? Great book to read. This goes into leadership too. Bare Knuckle Management. It's one of these type books, but it's funny. And it talks about your A players, your B players, your C players, and D players, right? And it gives you, most of us, maybe we can, and maybe we do know what an A player is, but we should know, right? If we're going to get money, let's invest it in our people. That would be my first thing. I want people. I want people that are going to run my business. I want people that are going to replace me. I want people that are going to multiply everything I do.
So I don't go buy a new house and a new car.
If you're ready to retire, heck yeah. If it's a big payout. Hey, I don't, Carm, I love it, right? Once again, if I get money, I invest it. Like we talked about at the top of the hour, right? I'm not going to buy a new car. I don't own new cars. I'm not going to get a car payment. I'm going to go buy a house. I'm going to go buy a piece of real estate for $500-$600. But I'm sorry, diverting.
So like you say, it's not time to buy a new car. It's not time to buy a bigger house. It's time to remember the commitment you said at the opening of the show, replace yourself. You can't replace yourself unless you have the good people, which is what your point was. Pay them. Don't worry about the KPIs. If that person is the future, if this person allows you to not be there for half the time, to have a condo in Florida, and that's your goal in 10 years, then you can't keep spinning them in a mill. You got to give them a place, a home to land in, to feel appreciated in. So it goes to culture, it goes to pay, it goes to benefits.
Absolutely. And we talk about, there's not a tech shortage. I work in both, right? I have technicians that are techs in my shop, and then I have software engineers that are technicians on software. And I'll tell you, there's just as much of a shortage for good software people as there is for technicians, which just means, look, I've got several people that are in my shop that were under crappy auto repair bosses, and they were about to leave the industry right? And I got a hold of them and said, hey, I'm going to train you. I'm going to spend money in training. I'm going to buy you a 401k. I'm going to give you vacation time. I'm going to do all the things that you need to do to build you up, to make you one of the pawns or knights in my army or whatever you're going to be, right? I'm going to spend that money because I believe in you. I believe that you have a lot of the qualities that I'm looking for that are going to be awesome, right? And it's the same thing over in my other company, right? I look for people. I'm going to build them up. I'm going to invest in them. Leadership, leadership, leadership. I mean, let's talk about, yeah, you know what, Carm? The problem is once we get money, once we start making money, we don't realize that we're the leaders, right? And leading and managing are two different things, right? So when you get money, what do you do with it, right? Even if you buy good people, are you going to burn those good people out? Are you going to beat them every day or beat them up every day because they're not doing it right or doing it your way, right? So that's when it comes into leadership and elevating those good people that you get through the door that you're paying good money. I don't pay. Oh, well, it's a great code. I can't remember it, but I don't pay them to make my decisions. I pay them to make their own decisions, right? I want them in there making decisions for themselves. So like you said, I'm not going to have a condo on the beach. I'm going to be off to another business, right? I love the journey. I love the struggle. I got a 400 trillion chance of being on this earth. I'm like you. I think we're like that. I get one shot at this, so I might as well enjoy this one shot and walk these different journeys. But you got to invest in those people, not only money-wise, you got to invest in leadership-wise, right?
You're not a reverend, are you? Because you're up on the pulpit. Man, you is preaching.
Hey, another technician that's working at Chick-fil-A right now. He's a certified technician working at Chick-fil-A. You know why? Because the place he worked at, he hated. And I can't get him to come back. You talk about one good technician we just lost because somebody else was horrible at leadership and management. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I am a preacher. I've got my license to marry people in Texas.
I
married my first person last
Isn't that wild?
I married my brother over the summer. Yeah, I married my brother.
In New York, they call them officiants. Is that what you are?
I was an officiant. It took me 3 minutes online to get my officiating degree.
Good for you. I can imagine you'd be sick. Now, listen, let me give you some rules of life here. I imagine that.
I did have three rules that they needed to adhere to in that wedding. And everybody walked up and they said, Chris, you know what? You should start a officiating wedding business. And I go, no, maybe next year. I love it.
Weddingsbychris.com. I love it.
Heck yeah. I like it too. Yeah. As a matter of fact, love it.
This has been a blast. I'm so glad we have been hanging out here. Salesmanship. I can't help but think that so many techs that want to start their business, their communication skills are talking to cars, talking to themselves. It doesn't matter if you're in a recruitment mode, you're speaking to vendors, you're talking to customers. You got to have a little bit of that, don't you?
Salesmanship is something that we avoid because sales became a dirty word. And it became a dirty word because of used car salespeople. That has changed, right? And if you know the levels of sales, the top salesperson is called an advisor. You know, you got a consultant and then you got an advisor. I want to be an advisor to somebody. I want to be an advisor to the people I have a relationship with, right? Sales is relationship. And I think what we've done, and it's still in the back of most people's mind, is sales is a dirty word because I'm trying to force something on you that you don't want to buy. That's not sales, right? And I think sales is ultimately important. But Carmen, another thing I want to talk about was when I was a technician, software engineer, very early on in my career, I was horrible at talking to people. I interfaced with a computer. I knew how to write code. And I realized very quickly that, wow, in order for me to be successful outside of writing code, I need to be able to communicate more effectively with people. So I started going out just like you. I'm a learned person. I believe in Kaizen. I believe in, you know, the whole idea of lifting that lid. I've been in Toastmasters for 20 years now, right? Because I had somebody say, Chris, you're great on stage, but you need to go to Toastmasters. And I said, and I was like, no, you know, I don't. But then I was like, you know what? I do. I need to learn how to communicate effectively. And so there's so much out there other than Toastmasters to help that technician to realize that communication and sales will be his key to his success. It's one of the keys, right? If you can't talk to your customer without getting mad, and be an advisor and be a consultant to them versus, well, they don't understand what an O2 sensor is and they don't understand this forum. They don't understand about, who cares? The customer does not care about the complexity of the car. They care, does my car get me to soccer practice? Does it get me to work? Does it get me to the grocery store? And that's communication, that's salesmanship, understanding what your customer wants, and just advising or consulting them on delivering.
Safety and reliability, consultative selling, tons of books out there on it. There's three types of selling: consultative, transactional, and enterprise. Enterprise would be like when Intel and Microsoft have offices in each other's building. Transactional is everything's a commodity, and it's a race to the bottom. Price doesn't matter. Value doesn't matter. And then consultative or slash relationship selling is really everything that we do. When I think about Toastmasters and I think about leadership and I think about a technician coming into our industry and starting his own business and getting his business coach and learning leadership, if you're going to be an effective communicator as a leader, I love the concept that you're saying is you got to tie that in with the Toastmasters so you can be a much more effective communicator.
Absolutely. Communication to me is why we get in fights with our wives, why we get in fights with our kids, why right now we have so much political discourse. You think about the division we have, and it's because communication, we're horrible at it now. We are more connected than ever, but our communication skills lack more than ever. We don't carry conversations anymore. Right? We're all passive aggressive.
Yeah, it's sound bites. I mean, we're communicating in sound bites. And
yes.
And the sound bite is indicative to the person who's sending it out. I want you to, this is my slant on the world. Here's my 15-second sound bite. We don't have enough time in our world to pay attention to anything, which is why people don't read. I mean, 300-page book, I got to read that. I don't have time. I can't even, wow, there's this great video out there, and I can only stomach the first 15 minutes of it because I'm chasing a silver bauble over there.
Yep.
And the other big part, I don't mean to be up on my own soapbox, but the listening piece, you talk about communicating with the wife, it's about the listening part.
Amen. In Toastmasters, one of the things they actually teach you is you have to listen and evaluate. There's a listener role. You're absolutely right. Communication, hey, that's why God gave us one mouth and two ears.
Yeah, I know. And, we know those quotes. We understand that piece. And yet, sometimes we fail to do the things inside our constitution.
You had Dennis McCarron on, and I'm going to give him a shout out. I've been to his Dimensions training class 3 times, and what he teaches you in that class is how to listen effectively, how to question people effectively, and how to get through objections. And pure leadership, you don't realize that when somebody comes and tells you, boss, I have a problem with this, immediately you go to solving a problem. No, you don't. You ask him, hey, Carm, tell me more about the problem. And then you get deeper and deeper, and you're good at it because you interview people. So you dig down deep. And everybody else listens 300 episodes, and they go, Carm, you're great at digging into people. And you are. But you know what? We all should be as leaders. We should be diggers, and we should find out what's the root cause. But what happens is we're problem solvers and we're fixers. Somebody comes to us and they say, I have a problem. We go, here's the solution. We don't ever give them any accountability. We don't let them think through the problem with us. We just give them, and it doesn't work that way. If you're going to elevate people, you're going to lift people, you have to empower them to solve their own problems, but you have to care enough to dig down deep and help solve those problems.
There's some great tactics inside of the Town Hall Academy we did on communicating between the service advisor and the tech. One of the big takeaways for me, because every episode in my mind has one thing that bubbles up, and it was write a novel. And it was you send the work order back, advise, noise on left side.
Yeah.
And, here the person coming, well, I was making a left and it was on the off ramp. I was going 45 miles an hour, but the service writer never wrote all that down because they didn't really hear it.
Correct. But it's the same thing we do, not with just customers, Carm. We do it with our people. We do, and we immediately dismiss, we fix problems, and we go on and we think, oh, yeah, I feel really good about what I just did with that person. I just solved their problem. But we never asked them, Why is there a problem? Is there a deeper issue in there? Just like that, and listen for those deeper issues so we can actually help, like you said, with the service writer to technician. I mean, we all, communication, once again, to me, if you're a master communicator in this world, I think that you own the keys to the kingdom. I think that from communication, you can not manipulate, but you can understand and you can help and you can change things if you understand them, right? If you communicate well enough, right? And we all have the problem.
I'm so glad we hooked up here and did this. I think about all the great lessons that we've done on the podcast and all the great stories that have been told. But this episode almost like took bits and pieces of all of that, served it up in the Chris Clodier way. I mean, you know, bam, right in your face. This is it. I think there's a great lesson here about the entrepreneurial side. It's a cool, exciting word, but it's an awful lot of work, an awful lot of pressure, an awful lot of responsibility.
It is. And if anybody listens to this, the one thing that I want them to realize is that struggle, like, it's okay. Like, we all go through it, and we should be able to talk to our peers about the struggle. And don't beat up the guy who's going through the struggle. Offer him an olive branch. You know, remember back to the day when you were struggling and offer that help, right? Versus, oh, you need a bump. Because we all go through it, right? And we're all entrepreneurs to some level. If you're a business owner, you're an entrepreneur. I want people who are going to water my grass, right? Fertilize my grass, however they do that. But I want fertilizer. I want water. I don't want somebody coming and trying to light my grass on fire or dig chunks of my grass out, right? So we need to think about that when we think you help people. Your podcast helps people. Going back to what I said earlier, right? The one guy, how many people? Can I help 1 million people before I die? If you could, wow, you could change the world, right? If you could just pick up a piece of trash when you walk down the street, what did you just do? What did it cost you? Nothing, right? And maybe somebody saw you pick up that piece of trash and then maybe they pick up a piece of trash. And that's the whole pay it forward thing, but I believe in it, right? But you got to do action, actionable items first. Supporting each other, realizing that we live in the struggle, right? The struggle is real.
Hey, Chris, next time you have anything that you want to get up on that pulpit, would you come back and let's dig into this again?
You got it, Carm. Absolutely. I love being on your show, man.
I loved it.
I felt the energy today, too. And I know you say every episode is the greatest episode, which makes me feel good. But I did appreciate it. I think we had some fire going on today.
Thank you, man. Hey, thank you, Chris Clodier. Thank you for your nice dose of passion and for sharing some great life lessons. We covered a lot of ground, so don't hesitate to listen again. If you want the key talking points, they are done for you at remarkableresults.biz/E307. Hey, thanks for listening to the Aftermarket's premier talk radio podcast. I so appreciate when you share the episode URL, the Aftermarket Insider newsletter, and any one of the social links to help benefit all aftermarket professionals. Talk soon, and don't forget, listen hard.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.